I think that to choose the theme of silence as the theme for the World Communications Day is strangely eloquent, to tell you the truth, because we live in a world where words, in a certain sense, have become a cheapened commodity, and where people say, very often, much less than they actually mean. I think that by choosing silence and word, Path of Evangelization, as the theme for 2012 Communications Day, the Pope has told us something about the richer qualities of communication. And in fact, the Church has been about the business of communicating not only by words for a very long time, in fact, from the beginning. I say this because the Church's liturgy, for example, is not just reading, is not just text, is not merely what we say. It's also the attitude of our bodies. It's also sound without words in terms of instrumental liturgical music. It involves the use of all of our senses in terms of the sense of smell, in terms of incense, and the flowers that are used to decorate the sanctuary for the Eucharistic liturgy and for other celebrations. So if we were to reduce communication to words, I think we would be much impoverished.
Well, how does this relate then to the new media? There you have images, you have audio, you have words. How do you see silence operating in that field?
Let me go back to St. Augustine, which might sound like a strange place to start to talk about the new media, but St. Augustine was a student of St. Ambrose. And because in antiquity, students did whatever they could to imitate their teachers, particularly when their teachers were revered, there's a story that is told of Augustine coming upon his teacher Ambrose and being quite surprised by the fact that when Ambrose was reading, he was reading silently. Well, what does this mean? It means that in antiquity, the words that were written on a page of a codex or the page of a scroll, the words were shorthand for oral communication, so that when people read in antiquity, they read to themselves and to each other out loud. Libraries in the ancient world were not places where librarians went around shushing people. The noisier the library was, the more clear an indication was that the library was being appropriately used. Private reading in silence is really only an artifact of much later history. Well, what does this imply for the new media? Well, for one thing, as the internet grew of age, it grew from being principally a text-based means of communication, where people typed things to each other across fairly limited networks, and the people who engaged in this kind of typing had to be people with a certain amount of skill and a certain amount of know-how in terms of using what were the awkward, kludgy, cumbersome technologies of that moment in what is at this point the digital past, to a situation now where by Skype I can talk to and I can see someone either here in Rome or in Indonesia in real time. So the medium has made communication more transparent. And in a certain sense, that has always been the intention of communications media, that is, to facilitate contact between people, to make it possible for people to encounter each other in meaningful ways. It's never been the role of the medium, whether print or otherwise, to stand in the way of quality communication. And the new media have done quite a lot to make communication more accessible, to make communication much more available to a broader population.
It seems to me you hit a key word there, quality. We don't always have quality on the internet, in the new media. We have people expressing opinions as facts. Facts often get distorted, so it's a question of knowing where to go to get the real facts.
There's a wonderful cartoon that appeared in the New Yorker magazine some time ago, and that cartoon depicts a dog sitting at a keyboard in front of a computer, and the caption is, "On the internet, nobody knows that you're a dog." And it's a wonderful way of capturing the way in which, to a certain extent, while the new media reveal quite a lot about the world, the new media can also conceal quite a lot about the interests of the author of a particular website, the interests or the background or the expertise of someone who is presenting information to the world. Now, we like to imagine that in the past, in the old media world, there were ways of vetting, there were ways of quality control that made it possible to identify someone who was an authorized spokesman for this or that viewpoint more effectively. Well, to a certain extent that worked, but to a certain extent that became a product of the ways in which people controlled publication in terms of the expenses, the significant expenses that are associated with publication. Because to print a book, to print a newspaper, requires an enormous infrastructure, a very intricate organization of experts in the manipulation of certain technologies, and requires selling these products to whoever happens to be willing to buy them. The internet has taken the intermediary out of that to a certain extent, which means that people can self-publish, can make information available in this way or in that way without having to invest in or without having to capture the interest of others who are willing to invest in the product that they are marketing. Now, I think net-net that has made information much more available, but at the same time it's made it that much more urgent for us to develop ways in which we can discern what constitutes quality information on the internet. So you know whether you're talking to a person or you're talking to a dog who's pretending to be a person.